The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the National Geographic and the New York Times. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we take a moment to do some travel planning for the coming months. Now, with the changes following the COVID pandemic, we've already seen quite an increase in travel. People have shown a desire to hit the road for adventure, recreation, and exploring new places. Well, that said, we found an article that provides an overview of some very unique travel destinations. It's called Best of the World 2024 and found in the March 2024 issue of National Geographic. Now, the editors write, from a horseback safari in Kenya to river rafting in West Virginia, here's our list of the top 20 travel experiences right now. Now, this is curated by National Geographic explorers, photographers, and editors, and we're going to begin first with an introductory note, and it states this page, referring to one of the two cover pages, it's a two-page spread, this page is a portal. No, really it is. Our annual Best of the World list is a gateway to the streets of Paris, the snowy Caucasus Mountains of Georgia, and the ancient rock art of Algeria. Now, to help us engage with places more deeply and meaningfully, we drew on National Geographic's global community of experts to create a ranked list of great adventures. This year, we expanded our recommendations online to include the hotels, restaurants, cultural spots, and wellness retreats that we love, as well as the game changers who inspire us to explore and the gear we don't want to leave home without. And there's a QR code you can scan to add to all this, and they concluded by saying, most of all, this is a celebration of travel's power to transform us and our connections with one another. So our first stop, and what they do is they provide the name of this place and the location. And number one is in Kenya. It's called the Ultimate Safari on Horseback, and they suggest traveling there between July and September. A safari in Africa usually conjures an image of mud-spattered 4x4 vehicles bouncing through the bush. But there's another way to travel, on horseback. Although horse safaris originated in Kenya in the 1970s, they are a perfect fit for today's growing number of travelers looking for more engaging, sustainable wildlife encounters. At the 32-acre Barana Conservancy, two stables house thoroughbreds and ex-polo ponies for riders of all skill levels. Visitors can book full day or overnight rides. And since wildlife perceive equines as just another animal, exploring the landscape atop a horse mates for an intimate experience, they write. To journey on horseback is to break down the walls, meant to protect but also to separate between oneself and the natural world, says Nicole Sebecki, a photographer and equestrian who's ridden in Barana. Your horse is your translator, responding to the low growl of the lion, the soft scent of a herd of elephants. A horse's ears are an advanced warning system, she says, helping knowledgeable guides navigate routes. And they got a beautiful picture of zebras and horses in their midst and watching wildlife as we make our first stop. Number two, they suggest this one in August 10th because it's part of the Olympics in Paris, France. Where else? Run like Olympians is the suggested title here. For the first time, members of the public will be able to run their own marathon during the 2024 Summer Olympics. Just one initiative aimed at creating more inclusive games held in the evening between the men's and women's official races. The Marathon for All will allow 20,024 qualifying lottery winners on the 26.2-mile route that links Paris and Versailles. Before or after the big event, you can learn the route to follow in their tracks, and they have a website. It's paris2024.org if you want to follow that. That's paris2024.org. And, by the way, a fun fact, the Olympic marathon route is inspired by the Women's March on Versailles in 1789. This was a pivotal moment in the French Revolution, for those of you who are history buffs. Next, We're going to head out to Ski New Peaks. This will be in Georgia, not Georgia the state, but Georgia the nation. And this is our number three stop. They suggest this between December and April. Long a means of transportation, exploration, hunting, and skiing is still a way of life in the mountainous Republic of Georgia. Now visitors can enjoy some of the nation's best backcountry skiing in the Caucasus with the help of outfitters such as Svinta Ski and Georgia Ski Touring. At Svinta, excursions may lead skiers to the Baibari Pass above or to the Ushguli villages, among the highest continuously inhabited in Europe. So if you want to do some climbing and really high altitude, cold weather stuff, this is the place to go, and you can ski new peaks. Now, we're going to join the bears on our next stop, number four, and this is in Katmai National Park, Alaska. And the best time to go is between June and September, according to the writers. Katmai National Park is home to one of the highest concentrations of brown bears in the world. Far from the crowded viewing platforms of the Brooks Camp Visitor Center, a guided trip along the Katmai coast with outfitters like AK Adventures reveals a different ride or side of the park. Here the bears feast on a diversity of foods, sedges, grasses, razor clams, salmon. For me, seeing a single brown bear in the wild is meaningful, says Acacia Johnson, a photographer from Alaska, because it is a sign that the landscape is healthy enough to support it, she says. Number five is going to be in Kyoto, Japan, and this is a year-round adventure. You can do it any time. Hear It Live is what they title it. Guidebooks speak of Kyoto as a frozen in time with hushed temples and meditative gardens. But after hours, Japan's former imperial capital reveals a live music scene that can be found loud and irreverent at venues like Jotoku and field rock, swing, and even Irish music echo into the night. Whatever you're into, from jazz to punk, there's a community to share your jam. And the quote is, "This is what happens in Japan when the mask comes off," says Kyoto guide Van Milton. So quite a fun trip there, it sounds like. Well, our best of the world continues with a cruise of an epic river. This is number six in Colombia. Between December and March, they suggest, about 80% of Colombia's population lives in the river basin of the Magdalena, which flows for nearly 1,000 miles from the Andes to the Caribbean. AMA Waterways New Cruises on the River, said to be the first by a major cruise operator, journey upstream during seven-night trips from Cartagena via Mompos to Barranquilla. Now, stops at colonial towns, performances of Vallenato and Cumbia music, and visits to a stilt house village highlight this region's culture along this mighty waterway. So it sounds like a lot of fun there. Then we're going to take a road trip west for our seventh location. This is in New Mexico between September and November. For nearly a century, Route 66 has beckoned to travelers. A trip along the Mother Road through New Mexico hits timeless landmarks such as quirky hotels or motels and curio shops in and around Tucumare and symbolic etchings in Petroglyph National Monument. And in Gallup, mentioned as one of the places to get your kicks in Nat King Cole's 1946 hit song Route 66, you can take in performances featuring Zuni, Lakota, and Dene, that's the Navajo dancers, some 18 miles of the highway. Traverse Albuquerque, the longest urban interlude of the route in the United States, and it's getting a $500,000 glow-up with the ongoing restoration of vintage neon signs along Central Avenue. And as you may have recalled from our previous episodes of Armchair Traveler, we've talked about Route 66. A lot of the old Art Deco sites are kind of sprucing up to kind of attract tourists and get people to make a return to the famous Route 66. Continuing the road trip west, while cruising down the Brighton Strip, stop at the new West Central Route 66 Visitor Center. And again, this is in New Mexico. With its museum and outdoor amphitheater, the center will host events like lowrider car shows, the drive-in movies, and artisan stalls. So that's all lots of fun there in Route 66. Well, next we're going to explore ancient art, and I suggest we do this between October and November, and the location is Algeria. Algeria is home to Africa's largest national park, which holds one of the world's greatest concentrations of ancient rock art, Tessili Niger National Park is a geologic wonderland of sandstone towers, arches, and sculpted outcrops. But these rock forests, such as the one in Adrit, are only half the story. Neolithic herders and hunter-gatherers carved 15,000 petroglyphs here, including images of elephants, giraffes, and rhinos. These animals are more commonly associated with sub-Saharan Africa, a hint that arid wilderness was once a grassland crisscrossed by waterways. 5 to 7 day guided tours with Fancy Yellow take in the most spectacular works of Tassili's art, like the crying cows engraved at the base of a stone pinnacle 7,000 years ago. So just talk about stepping back in time. Quite an interesting trip there. Well, we move on to our ninth location, and this is between March and July in the coral coast of Australia, where we dive with the sharks. Stretching almost 700 miles along the Indian Ocean north of Perth, Western Australia's coral coast is studded with natural wonders, but Ningaloo Reef is the star. Here you can dive with giants. Some 300 to 500 whale sharks, one of the largest congregations on Earth, gather along the reef each year between March and July. Even more megafauna around Ningaloo from July to October, when about 40,000 humpback whales migrate along the Australian coast. My guess would be if you want to do some whale watching, that's the place to go. So let's move on and hike a volcano now, our 10th location. Where? In Panama, in between December and April, they suggest. A sustainability leader, Panama recently launched its 1,000 Kilometers of Trails project, which seeks to bring outdoor recreation and green tourism to rural communities and protected areas. First out of the gate is the Ruta de la Cadela, a system of 5 trails around the extinct Valle de Unton Volcano. Now, the treks take in waterfall-speckled landscapes, according to photographer Rosemary Cromwell, who hiked sections of the Ruta de la Cadela over 5 days. There were some spectacular views on top of the volcanic crater, she says. Interesting land formations covered in so much green. Well, how about the eclipse coming up here pretty soon? And you can catch an eclipse at Niagara Falls, and April 8th is the date for this one. Directly in the path of totality, Niagara Falls will offer views of a total solar eclipse, which won't occur again in the contiguous United States until the year 2044. For about 3.5 minutes, beginning at approximately 3:18 p.m., again, that's April 8th, the sky will darken over the thunderous cataract as the moon crosses between Earth and the sun. On the U.S. side of the falls, Terrapin Point, Prospect Point, and the Observation Tower will be prime viewing areas if clouds stay away. From the Canadian side, an excellent vantage point is Table Rock. A side bonus, the sunny day rainbow that hovers above the falls will become pink. Number 12, Trek a Glacier, and this will be in Chile between November and March. In Patagonian Chile's Laguna San Rafael National Park, visitors can trek atop the Exploradores Glacier, taking in a panorama of pale blue ice massifs and glacial waterways. Some 17,300 glaciers still cover Patagonia's ice fields, but rising temperatures are rapidly melting them. Climate scientists say sustainable tourism, such as hikes with outfitters like Turismo Valle Leones, supports local communities and supports inspires travelers to learn more about how to protect glaciers. So that might be an interesting trip if you're into that. Well, how about stepping back in time is our next one. This is in Mallorca, Spain, and this is our 13th location, and they suggest between April and June for this adventure. Spain's Balearic Islands are best known for the jet-set beach destinations of Ibiza and Mallorca, but quiet, less developed Mallorca has a unique motherlode, the archipelago's greatest repository of ancient architecture. In an area of just 270 square miles, Mallorca has a total of 1,574 inventoried archaeological sites, ranging from the foundation blocks of small dwellings to well-preserved village centers that existed long before the Roman Empire. Most striking are the Navitas, megalithic tombs dating back to the 1600 BC era. And then we have tellyettes and watchtowers built from mortarless blocks of limestone. And then there are the tullas, shrines exclusive to Menorca that evoke Stonehenge pillars. Now, these remnants of the Taliotic Menorcan culture, the first civilization to inhabit the island, have now been inscribed on UNESCO's World Heritage List. The open-air monuments are easy to visit. The island's Miwan Road passes by some of the best-preserved sites, including the settlement of Telate de Dalt, Navate de Tadons, and Tula de Torlatrenqueda. Now, re-enter the 21st century at the new Hauser and Wirth Gallery in the picturesque town of Mahon, and housed in a repurposed 18th-century hospital building. The cultural venue presents contemporary art exhibits and has outdoor sculpture trail with works by Louis Bourgeois and Joan Miró. So, stepping back in time there in Menorca, Spain. Now, on to number 14, the classic rails ride, and where? In the Scottish Highlands. Best time to go, April to October. Exploring Scotland's wild scenic highlands doesn't have to mean roughing it. The Royal Scotsman train glides along the moody lochs and dramatic peaks in style. New suites, debuting in May 2024, sport interiors that reflect the compelling landscapes through dark woods, wool tweeds, and richly patterned bespoke tartans crafted by Scottish brand Ermamenta Campbell. Now, guests can wind down after a day of spent hiking to waterfalls or playing rounds of golf, a sport inextricably tied to Scotland, with a massage on board the outdoor spa, or on board spa. Now, departing Edinburgh's Waverley Station, the 2 to 7 night rail journeys cross the heart of the Highlands, from the Perthshire to Inverness to the rugged west coast. Now, during stops, guests can tour castles, stargaze in Cairngorms National Park, sample whiskey at revered distilleries, and even take in a dip in a loch, better known as a lake, okay? Well, let's find authentic flavor next. Where? In the Isayan, Thailand. This is our 15th stop. The best time to go between December and February, they say. The Isayan region is known for its distinctive cuisine that reflects influences from bordering Laos and Cambodia. Isayan is hidden gem of Thailand, says Virtuat Num Trayasawat, chief of the Michelin Guide, recommends Samway and Sons in the Isayan city of Udon and Thani. One key ingredient of the region's delicious food is prala, a fermented fish seasoning that boosts umami flavor. Local dishes include lab, which is minced meat salad, traditionally served during celebrations. Time to wander the tea trails for our 16th location between January and March in Sri Lanka. Now, Sri Lanka is virtually synonymous with tea. Now, visitors can trace the footsteps of historic tea planters on the new nearly 200-mile Pico Trail, the country's first long-distance walking route. Now, starting just outside Kandy, the trail follows the 19th-century tracks upon workers and horse-drawn carts transported freshly plucked leaves. Hikers pass through hill towns and tea plantations and can stop to take a cooking class or savor a cup of aromatic Ceylon tea. So lots of fun there, huh? If you like tea, that's the place to go, it sounds like. Well, for our 17th stop, it's a gallery hop, and this is going to be in Sao Paulo, Brazil, between September and November, they recommend. Sao Paulo, Brazil's largest city, is an art lover's paradise, home to numerous galleries, exhibitions, and street art. The crowning jewel of the Museu de Arte de Sao Paulo, which is expanding to showcase more of its 11,000-plus artworks, from pre-Renaissance paintings to contemporary sculptures. Departing from the usual model of exhibiting works on the wall, masks hang some pieces against clear panels, allowing visitors to view the art from all angles. And that's really a lot of fun when you can go into a gallery and do that way. New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art does that, and it's quite spectacular, so I would encourage that if you're a real art lover. That's something to enjoy. Well, Raft the Rapids is our next adventure. This is number 18, between April and October. And where? Well, no less than West Virginia. Despite its name, West Virginia's New River is actually one of the oldest on Earth, perhaps as old as 360 million years. The river falls 750 feet and only 50 miles between sandstone cliffs. It eventually merges with the Gauley River, and outfitters such as Ace Adventure Resort can arrange whitewater rafting trips here on Class 3 to 5 rapids. That's some major water there. They're the longest and deepest river gorge in the Appalachians. Now it's time to go antiquing, and this is our 19th adventure. And where do we do this? Hudson Valley, New York. This is year-round. The bucolic Hudson Valley is booming thanks to an influx of New York City residents during the pandemic, but it's long been a mecca for artists. Its landscapes inspired America's first artistic fraternity, the Hudson River School. Antique collectors will be drawn to the hundreds of stores, boutiques, craft shops, and flea markets that sell everything from colonial furniture and rare books to mid-century modern decor. There's a common denominator here, the charming historic villages, says Sarah Gray Miller, owner of Coxsackie Antique Store Unquiet. From Athens to Sargates, these towns share a strong commitment to preservation, she says. And our final stop, we sleep on water. And where do we do this? In Tofino, British Columbia. Best time between May and October. The newly reopened Tofino Wilderness Resort, owned by the Oshawott First Nation, is an idyllic base from which to explore the western coast of British Columbia's Vancouver Island. In the heart of the Clayoquot Sound, the luxury floating lodge was renovated with lumber from the previous fallen timber on site. Through guided whale-watching trips or visits to the Freedom Cove Artist Sanctuary, the Oshawott share with the guests their philosophy, and this is Hishukish Tishwak. Everything is one, is how that translates, celebrating the interconnectedness of people and nature in a land they've occupied for thousands of years. So go join them and have a lot of fun. So there you go, my friends. By the way, the primary author of Best in the World 2024 is Karen Carmichael. An additional reporting offered by Robert Draper, Acacia Johnson, Nicole Sebecki, Daniel Stable, Eva Vandenberg, and Henry Westmeyer. Writer Michael Harmon also has some travel tips for us in his article, Indigenous Tourism Goes Deeper Than Dinner and a Show. This article appeared in the January 15th, 2024 issue of the New York Times. As the editors write in the introduction, around the globe, travelers are looking to get beyond superficial interactions with native cultures for more in-depth experiences like tours led by indigenous guides and stays at native-owned lodges. So we go down under to learn more from Michael Harmon's story. For visitors to New Zealand, the chance to see a haka, the ceremonial Maori dance, has long been as much a part of the country's allure as its glaciers, geysers, and glowworm caves. But increasingly, instead of merely catching a cultural performance en route to New Zealand's fjordland, travelers are lingering longer and deeper, seeking out more immersive ways to engage with the country's indigenous heritage. We're seeing a shift from the checkbox mentality to a hunger for deep, transformative experiences, said Sarah Handley, the general manager for North America and Europe at Tourism New Zealand, the country's tourism marketing agency. It's not just about witnessing the haka, it's about understanding the meaning and stories behind it, she said. That shift is happening not just in New Zealand, but around the world, particularly as more travelers want to experience the planet's natural wonders by way of the people and traditions indigenous to those places. Put simply, travelers want more out of their vacations, said Jamie Sweeting, the vice president of sustainability for the tour company G Adventures, whose itineraries include overnight accommodations ranging from indigenous-owned Eco Lodge in the Ecuadorian Amazon to a community homestay in Indonesia's Tengger tribe. Especially since the pandemic, Mr. Sweeting said, people are looking for experiences that help them change the way they see the world. Indigenous-owned and led tourism experiences, a sector of the global tourism market valued at about $40 billion in 2022 and forecast to grow to $65 billion by 2032, are increasingly an answer. Embracing slow travel, Maori style. And so it says here, on New England's North Island, visitors hungry for culturally immersive wilderness experiences are spoiled for choice. Now, in the Bay of Plenty region, which has a long tradition of Maori-guided nature tourism, the Maori-owned Tuare Treks offers single and multi-day guided wilderness walks through the Te Uaura Forest, the first in the world to be granted legal personhood status, meaning the forest now effectively owns itself, in recognition of the traditional Maori worldview. One-day guided trek started $240 New Zealand. That comes to about $151 U.S. A three-day trek cost $1,050 with nights spent camping or in New Zealand's famous backcountry huts. Now, about an hour's drive north, the Kahupa Tapu Lodge, double rooms from about $100 offers a similarly immersive alternative to some of the packaged Maori cultural experiences available in nearby Rotorua, whose dinner and show Maori evenings have helped to live up to its nickname, Rota Vegas. Now, in contrast, Kahupa Tapu encourages guests to embrace slow travel, Maori style, with an extensive menu of cultural, nature-based, and culinary activities highlighting both the region's indigenous history and the contemporary Maori lifestyle. So, one more time on that location is the Kahupa Tapu. There we go. We got it right for you. Now, we invite our visitors into our community, our home, our way of life, and it's very natural, says Kahupa Tapu Lodge co-owner Nadine Toto. Travelers are seeking more authentic and intimate experiences out of the main centers that are based in real life. The pandemic absolutely jolted our visitors into a new way of thinking about travel, she said. Jerry Whalen, age 72, visited New Zealand with his wife Cindy on a Viking ocean cruise in December 2022. Opting for a ground excursion on the North Island with a Maori cultural focus, the couple spent a full afternoon at the Kahupa Tapu Lodge that included a guided hike to visit ancient Maori cave paintings, a traditional meal cooked over hot stones, and an intimate haka demonstration. The Whalens were so taken by the Kahupa Tapu that they've kept in touch with Miss Toto and hope to return for a longer stay. Now, the next section says, in Australia, big companies join in across the Tasman Sea. Australia is also witnessing a surge in demand for Indigenous-led travel. Mark Olson, the chief executive of Tourism Tropical North Queensland, the majority Indigenous region that includes the Great Barrier Reef, has observed an uptick in both the number of domestic travelers participating in Indigenous experiences and the average number of nights spent doing so. Tourism Australia, the Australian government's tourism marketing agency, has recorded a similar trend among international visitors over the last decade. The intersection of tourism and Australia's indigenous peoples, the Aborigines and the Torres Strait Islanders, hasn't always been so promising. In 2017, Australia made international headlines when it banned people from ascending Uluru, the iconic monolith in Australia's Red Centre that's also one of the country's most visited tourist attractions. But the ban came only after decades of pleas from the local Aboriginal community not to climb the site, which is sacred to them. Today, though, and in addition to a growing number of Indigenous-owned and operated tourism businesses in Australia, Mr. Olson noted that even our large tour companies are making efforts to involve traditional owners in their tours. Operations like Dreamtime Dive and Snorkel, which employs Indigenous guides, they share their culture and stories during the trip to the Great Barrier Reef. Day tours range from $219 Australian, and that's about $150 US, and they are considered a rebuttal to the notion that Australia's natural sites and Aboriginal cultures should be experienced separately. And by the way, the writers go on to say, we're having to excerpt this article, they go on to say that this trend, by the way, is seen in other parts of the world, too. So a lot of Indigenous travel going on, a lot of fun with locals. And that's going to bring us to the end of today's Journey of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Our website again, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any questions or comments, you may direct them to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.